Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And all of them are related to our effort to stamp out radical Islam in one way or another. The good martini comes to us courtesy of the military justice system. CNN's report, this is actually from Monday, U.S. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl will face a military court on charges of desertion and endangering fellow soldiers, the U.S. Army announced Monday. General Robert Abrams, the commander of U.S. Army Forces Command, ordered the court-martial on Monday, breaking with the U.S. military officer overseeing Bergdahl's preliminary hearing, who recommended that Bergdahl be referred to a special court-martial and face no jail time. Abrams on Monday ordered Bergdahl's case to a general court-martial, which means Bergdahl could face life imprisonment if convicted of misbehavior before the enemy by endangering the safety of a command, unit, or place. This is obviously in relation to Bo Bergdahl, who, of course, was very controversially swapped for five hardcore Taliban figures in the middle of 2014. Jim, it seemed like there might even be a political fix in with that preliminary ruling that he wouldn't face any jail time. Who knows how this general court-martial will turn out, but at least General Abrams here is putting the charges down, and we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, it says something about the cynicism of our age that this is a pleasant surprise. But it is indeed, looks like this is going to go forward. Again, it'll be interesting to see what kind of defenses they put forward of this. It's very hard to argue that he didn't make this case. You almost wonder if there's an effort to set up an insanity defense, Greg, because I don't know if you heard on the podcast that NPR does, they interviewed him and he compared himself to Jason Bourne. So, because you remember in the movie, Jason Bourne walks away and lots of troops get killed looking. No, it's not what happens in the movie at all. You're nothing like Jason Bourne. So five hardcore Al-Qaeda and for this guy who deserted and who it's conceivably could go to jail for the rest of his life. Probably won't be quite as harsh as that. But those are from, you know, pretty serious charges there. Now, the next thing, which I think, you know, I think was someone was asking, our old National Review colleague, Mark Stein, asked, if there were real press in this country, if someone would ask Obama how it is that he ended up being the first president to host a Rose Garden celebration for a deserter. And now the real question is, at some point before, like, say, December 2016, does Bo Bergdahl get pardoned?
Mm.
Good morning, everybody.
Wow, that's a good martini. But Let's focus on the good news for now. So at least there's going to be the opportunity for justice to be done here. Okay, on to the rest of the war against radical Islam and on to the bad martini. Yesterday, of course, the president went to the Pentagon and told us all once again what a bang-up job the current policy is doing against ISIS. But the more it's dug into, the policy seems to have some holes. This is from Guy Taylor over at the Washington Times. In a secret project tied to the overall U.S. campaign against the Islamic State, intelligence officials have spent months mapping out known physical locations of media safe houses where the extremist group's operatives are compiling, editing, and curating raw video and print materials into finished digital propaganda products for dissemination across the internet. Most of the locations are embedded in heavily residential areas in Syria, Iraq, and Libya, and are not being targeted by U.S. airstrikes because of Obama administration concerns about civilian casualties, according to sources who spoke to the Washington Times, only on the condition of anonymity. The White House also has been pressing the intelligence community to continue studying the facilities for a deeper understanding of how the Islamic State and its media enterprises operate. Jim, obviously terrorists are going to embed themselves into residential areas, and it once again goes to the rules of engagement here. If the enemy's smart enough to know what President Obama and his administration won't do to stop them, they're going to do it.
Yeah. Even if you believe that the risk to civilian casualties is too high to justify the strike, it's really tough to, you know, if you announce we're not going to target you if you're hiding amongst these areas, you're basically telling ISIS, here's what you need to do so that we won't hit you. And only bad things can come out of that. Like a molecule-level defense of the administration. I'm thinking back to the war against Serbia in the late 90s in the Balkans. We hit the national television station of Serbia. And there was a – I remember some. There was a makeup woman who was in there. And they kind of turned into a big issue after the war that this was a woman who was not a supporter of Milosevic, had no ties to the war crimes, was really was there at gunpoint. Basically, you're going to be there and you're going to do makeup when we need to do our announcements to the people and stuff. This is a murky gray area. And it's – but I guess the idea is that we have to get – I would say we have to dispel this notion you can fight a war without civilian casualties. It's going to happen. This is why we try to avoid wars, and this is why we try to end wars rapidly. But the idea – the idea that you can fight a war and never end up hurting civilians – it's just an unrealistic expectation, and trying to abide by it means you end up prolonging the war because you're not willing to strike the enemy where they exist. ISIS propaganda is a problem. We need to get rid of it. And I don't know if the, State Department's, turn away, turn back, look away social media campaign is going to do it. And it's just an example of how this administration really wants to, half-hearted at best in its efforts against ISIS.
On to the crazy martini now, and staying with ISIS, it's time to just accept the fact that it's going to exist. According to The Independent, the British newspaper, this story says, last week, the publication of a cache of internal memos leaked from official ISIS sources, including a 24-page statecraft blueprint. The documents show that ISIS has already lived up to its name, whether we like it or not. Yet Western policies continue to deny this reality, like the war on drugs. The war against ISIS remains predicated on the flawed notion that acceptance implies legitimation. With the U.S. and other Western countries are finally coming around to more reality-based drug policies, the time has come to embrace the same principles of harm reduction when it comes to international relations. Only by recognizing and treating ISIS as a bona fide state can we hope to understand its workings and motivations and, wait for it, ultimately contain its murderous advance across the region. He goes on to say that history shows that diplomatic recognition of extremist governments can make them more likely to moderate their behavior. The example he uses, the Soviet Union following the Bolshevik Revolution when the Brits finally recognized them in 1924, because there were no more atrocities from the Soviet Union after that. So,
Greg, if we follow this plan, we got these guys beaten in 70 years. And, a couple of, million dead from gulags and forced starvation and secret police and all that stuff later. And also, maybe I guess Afghanistan gets invaded again. But a lot of people are screaming bloody murder over this. I kind of find this useful. I kind of think we need to be shocked into this. We need to be aware that there are those among us who look at the horrors of ISIS and say, how can we compromise with this? How can we reach an agreement with this? Here's the thing. I guess, in that previous tweet, we talked about how bad war is, Greg. But there are things that are worse than war. And I think becoming complicit in evil ranks as something worse than war. And I think I'm actually glad. This is sort of a dropping of the mask. There are people in this world who are perfectly comfortable with the most vicious, bloodthirsty, despotic and maniacal regimes. They're perfectly okay with it as long as it doesn't affect them. And I think it's on the one hand, this is terrible. On the other hand, I think this is very useful. We need to know that, yes, there are voices in the West that look at ISIS and say, we can reach a deal with these people. And it's not unprecedented. As I mentioned in the Morning Jolt, there was a op-ed in the Boston Globe in September 2005 saying it was time to talk to Al-Qaeda. Now, if you went back and looked at the Bin Laden tapes, Al-Qaeda claimed the right to kill 200,000 American children. We don't negotiate with that. We don't deal with that. You say stuff like that, we come and we destroy you. That's how it is. And there are people, voices in the West that don't want to do that. I find it greatly clarifying op-eds like this. And so in that sense, I say kudos. On the other hand, I think maybe it might be more useful if The Independent had said, hey, we found a maniac who thinks we should be talking to ISIS. And here's what he says and here's why he's wrong.
Good job finding the silver lining in that, Jim.
Well, there you go. I do my part, Greg.
On that note, we'll regroup. And of course, tomorrow we'll probably have some reaction to the showdown in Vegas. Only 9 on the stage this time for the Republicans in the final debate of 2015. Jim, I'm sure your popcorn bags are already ready.
Oh, can't wait. Here's the thing. Are you itching for that the 6 o'clock debate, Greg? Santorum and Huckabee and Pataki and Lindsey Graham and
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great.
You know, actually, here's the, I actually, you know, partially because I didn't pick up the kids, I may not watch it tonight. And I used to feel guilty when Jindal was on that stage. And now I don't. I really don't. They're collectively, they're at 2.7% in the Real Clear Politics average. And I'm sure there's some folks who are going to be mean, say I'm being mean and dismissive of these guys. Look, it's not like, it's not like we don't know these guys. They're not the fresh faces in the field. You know, Graham is funny. I think I actually like, you know, Huckabee and Santorum sometimes. Pataki's just taking up space, but he's a Jets fan. Some people might say that's redundant. But yeah, so the real thing starts at 8:30 tonight, folks. Enjoy.
Oh, yes. Get some rest, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. He's Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.